But Drustin didn't come to dinner that night. As a matter of fact, the stubborn man managed to hide from her for nearly a week. Chapter 19. Chaos had stormed his castle, dressed in lusciously low-cut gowns, silky slippers and ribbons, Drustin brooded, raking his hair back and tying it with a leather thong. None of his fortress's defenses were useful against her, unless he wished to declare open warfare, mount up the guards and dust off the catapult. At which point, of course, his Da and Nell would laugh themselves silly. He'd been avoiding her since the day he'd taken her to Balinok. The next time he touched her, he'd top her. He knew that. He fisted his hands at his sides, inhaling sharply. His only recourse was to avoid her completely until Dagus returned with Anya. When Dagus confirmed that no such battle had occurred, he would have her removed from his castle and sent far away. "How far will be far enough?" a most unwelcome voice asked. He knew that voice well. It was the one that endeavored daily to convince him that he had every right to take her to his bed. A most dangerous, frighteningly persuasive voice. He groaned and closed his eyes. He enjoyed a blissful moment's respite until her laughter, lifted by the buoyant summer breeze, soared through the open window of his chamber. Eyes narrowed. He peered out, both dreading and anticipating what gown she might have donned today. Would it be purple? Violet, indigo, lavender? It was almost as if she knew of his preference for the vibrant color, and with her golden hair, she looked splendid in it. This morn she wore sheer mauve with a golden girdle, no surcoat in deference to the sunny weather. Succulent, creamy breasts rose from the simple scooped neck. She depiled her blonde tresses atop her head, and threaded with violet ribbons, it tumbled in delightful disarray about her face. She sauntered across his lawn, as if all his estate belonged to her. For the past week she'd been everywhere he'd wanted to be, driving him to seek seclusion wherever it could be found. He ducked into chambers in the castle he'd forgotten even existed. She hadn't bothered to be subtle about it. The moment she saw him, she chased about after him wearing a ferocious scowl, jabbering away about things she had to tell him. Daily her tactics grew more sly and underhanded. Last night the audacious wench had picked the lock to his chamber. Because he'd had the foresight to barricade the door with a heavy armoire, she'd then gone to his door in the corridor and picked that lock. He'd been forced to escape out the window. Halfway down he'd slipped, crashed the last 15 feet to the ground, and landed in a prickly bush. Since he'd not had time to don his trews, his manly parts had taken the brunt of his abrupt entry into the bush, putting him in a foul mood indeed. The wench sought to unman him before his long-anticipated wedding night. His every movement, every thought, every decision was being directly affected by her presence, and he resented it. Her finger was even in the food he ate in the garrison with the guards, safely away from her, as Nell had begun experimenting with new recipes, and he'd like to know what the blethering hell was wrong with the old ones. And she'd begun learning to ride, had indeed coaxed the stable master to teach her, probably for the cost of a smile with a dimple on one side, for he certainly hadn't seen her shoveling out the stables. In mid-afternoon she could be found prancing about on a gentle mare across the front lawn of the estate, impairing his passage. He had to admit she'd found her seat rather well. Any day now when he vaulted astride his horse to escape her, she'd follow him. His life had been so orderly before her arrival. Now his life was ordered about her schedule and how to avoid her. He'd been heading towards certain success, all the things he'd longed for. Just the day before she'd appeared on the doorstep, he'd been dreaming of holding his first son in his arms within the year, God willing that young Anya would catch a babe so quickly. But now he dreamed of her. This morn, when he'd sneaked into his chambers for a change of clothing, he'd heard the splash of her bath. He'd paced from hearth to window and back again, convinced she was splashing far more than necessary, just to force him to think of rosy breasts and thighs and silken gold hair, misted with glistening beads of water. Drustin stared out the window, scowling. She was driving him mad. How could so wee a wench create such havoc with his senses? Last night, after he'd fallen out his own window, he'd tried to catch a short nap in the hall. A short time later, she'd wandered down. There he'd been sitting, feet propped up, staring with heavy-lidded eyes into the fire, seeing golden tresses in the flames, when he'd caught a whiff of her unique scent and turned to see her standing on the stairs, clad only in a diaphanous night rail.
"Trustin, you can't keep avoiding me," she'd said.
Without a word, he'd leaped to his feet and fled the castle. He'd gone to sleep in the stables. The laird of the castle, catching winks in the stables by Amergen! But had he stayed within the walls, he would have made short work of her sheer rail, kissed and suckled and devoured every inch of her body. His traitorous father and Nell weren't making things any easier. They'd welcomed her into their lives with the enthusiasm of parents who'd finally gotten the daughter they'd longed for. Nell sewed for her, dressing her in luscious creations. Sylvan played chess with her on the terrace, and Drustin had no doubt that once Dagus returned, he'd like as not set to trying to seduce the lovely witch. And Drustin would have no right to complain. He was getting married. If Dagus wanted to seduce the lass, what right had he to argue? He crashed his fist down on the stone window ledge. A sinnet. He had only to avoid her until then. The moment Dagus returned, confirming there'd been no battle, he would pack the lass off to Edinburgh, aye. Mayhap England! He'd send her with a flank of guards, finding some excuse to keep his flirtatious brother at home. Thrumming with frustrated energy, he stomped from his chamber. He would go for another long ride and try to while away yet another eternal day, ticking them off on a calendar in his head, one day nearer salvation. As he loped down the hall toward the servant's stairs, he stiffened and spun about. By God, he would not skulk out the back entrance again. If she was fool enough to try something when he was in such a mood, she would suffer for it. Drustin rounded the corner at a full charge and crashed abruptly into Nevin.
"My lord!"
Nevin gasped, flying backward.
"Sorry."
He grabbed the priest by the elbows and steadied him on his feet. Nevin smoothed his robes, blinking.
"Nay, 'twas my fault. I fear I was lost in thought and didn't hear your approach. But 'tis grateful I am for our encounter. I was coming to seek you out, if you have a moment. There's a wee matter I wish to discuss with you."
Drustin tamped down a flash of impatience, then got angry that he was feeling impatient to begin with. It was her fault. He'd whiled away many a fine hour talking with Nevin, and not once suffered impatience. He liked the young priest. He took a deep, calming breath and forced a smile.
"Is aught amiss with the chapel?"
he asked, the cameo of patient interest.
"Nay, it goes well, my lord. We have but to replace the altar stones and seal the new planking. It will be finished in ample time."
Nevin paused.
"'Twas a different matter I wish to speak with you about."
"You needn't hesitate to speak your mind with me,"
Drustin assured him. Nevin seemed reluctant to broach whatever topic was worrying him. Had he seen the bampot chasing him about? Was the priest concerned about his upcoming betrothal? "God knows I am," he thought darkly.
"'Tis my mother again,"
Nevin trailed off, sighing. Drustin released a pent breath and relaxed. It was only Bassetta.
"She's been agitated lately, muttering about some danger she thinks I'm in."
"More of her fortune-telling?"
Drustin asked dryly. "Was the estate to be overrun with addled women spouting dire predictions?"
"Aye,"
Nevin said glumly.
"Well, at least now 'tis you she's worried about. A fortnight past, she was telling Sylvan that my brother and I were cloaked in darkness or something of the like. What does she fear will happen to you?"
"'Tis the oddest thing. She seems to think your betrothed will harm me in some fashion."
"Anya!"
Drustin laughed.
"She's but 5 and 10, and I've heard a most biddable lass."
Nevin shook his head with a rueful smile.
"My lord, 'tis futile to sink sense in it. My mother is not well. If you should encounter her and she carries on like a madwoman, 'tis because she's worsening daily. I believe the walk to the castle is beyond her abilities, but should she somehow manage it, I beg you, be gentle with her. She's ill, very ill."
"I'll warn Da and Dagus. Do not fash yourself, or simply guide her back home should she roam."
He made a mental note to be kinder to the old woman. He hadn't realized she was so ill.
Thank you, my lord.
Druston started down the corridor again, then stopped and glanced back. He enjoyed Nevin's philosophical mind and wondered how the priest reconciled a fortune-telling mother with his faith. It might also shed light on his tolerance for the McKeltar. Druston knew Nevin had been in residence long enough to have heard most of the rumors by now. Men of the Kirk generally held staunch views on pagan doings, but Nevin radiated some inner understanding that defied Druston's comprehension.
Do any of her predictions ever come true?
Nevin smiled serenely.
If there is aught of truth in her ewe-castings, 'tis because God chooses to speak in such manner.
You do think pagan and Christian are breached by an irreconcilable chasm?
Nevin considered his answer a moment.
I know 'tis the common belief, but nay, it offends me not that she reads her sticks. It grieves me that she thinks to change what she sees therein. His will be.
So, has she been right or no?
Druston pressed. Nevin was oft evasive, difficult to pin down. But Druston sensed he didn't intend to be evasive. He was merely non-judgmental to an extreme.
If someone is to harm me, 'tis my father's will. I shan't naysay him.
In other words, you won't tell me.
Nevin's eyes sparkled with amusement.
My lord, God doesn't bear any of his creation's ill will. He gives us opportunities. 'Tis all in the way you view it. My mother has a suspicious mind, so she sees suspicious things. Keep your eyes open, my lord, for the chances he gives you. Keep your heart true, and I bid you, use what gifts he may have given you with love, and you will never wander from his grace.
What do you mean, gifts?
Another calm smile, and some fascinating awareness in Nevin's clear blue gaze. Druston smiled uneasily, and wound down the corridors to the Great Hall. Gwyn had just walked into the hall and slumped into a chair when he came down. She nearly fell off her chair, so startled was she to see him walking toward her and not skulking out the back entrance. Her first instinct was to leap up, fling her arms around his leg like a child and cling so he couldn't get away from her. But she reconsidered, thinking he might just shake her off him and stomp her, if the expression on his face was a true indication of his feelings about her at the moment. He was awe-inspiringly large. She decided to try the subtle approach.
Does this mean you finally decided to listen to me, you pig-headed, stubborn Neanderthal?
He walked past her as if he hadn't even heard her.
Druston?
What?
He snapped, spinning about to look at her.
Can't you leave me in peace? My life was fine, wonderful until you appeared, flitting about.
His gaze raked over her bountiful curves, nicely fluffed in her gown.
Trying to tempt me into making a fangle of my wedding.
Flitting? Tempting you? Could you show off your legs more? Walk around with no shirt on a bit more often? Oh, silly me, of course you couldn't. You're shirtless all the time.
Druston blinked, and she saw the hint of her Druston's grin tugging at his lips, but he fought it admirably. Casually, he adjusted his sporran, hiking his plaid up a bit more. He tossed his silky black hair over his shoulder and arched a dark brow. Her hormones broke out party streamers and kazoos. She leaned forward, folding her arms beneath her chest. She felt the edging on her bodice graze her nipple.
Two can play that game, Druston, she thought.
His silvery eyes changed instantly. Icy amusement was replaced by untamed lust. For a long, suspended moment, she thought he was going to duck his head, charge her, and carry her up the stairs to a bed. She held her breath, hoping. If he did, at least then she might be able to soothe him enough to get him to listen. After, of course, they made love 9 million times and her own hormones had been properly soothed. She peeped at him from beneath her brows, her gaze a blatant challenge. A come-hither-if-you-dare look. She hadn't known she had it in her, but she was realizing there were a lot of things she hadn't known she had in her, until she'd met Druston McKelter.
You know not what you provoke,
he growled.
Oh, yes, I do,
she shot right back.
A coward. A man who's afraid to hear me out because I might prove inconvenient to his plans. I might dishevel his tidy world,"
she mocked. The flicker in his eyes blazed into flame. His gaze raked over her exposed bosom. She nearly gasped at the savagery in his expression. He was shaking, vibrating with suppressed desire.
"Is that what you want? You want me to tup you?"
he demanded roughly.
"If that's the only way I can get you to hold still long enough to listen to me,"
she snapped.
"Were I to tup you, lass, you wouldn't be speaking, for your mouth would be busy with other things, and I of a certain wouldn't be listening. So give over, unless you're looking for a rough roll in the heather with a man who wishes he'd never laid eyes upon you."
He spun on his heel and stalked out the door. When he was gone, Gwen sighed gustily. She knew that for a moment she'd almost had him, had almost provoked him into another kiss. But the man's willpower was nothing short of amazing. She knew he was attracted to her. It crackled in the air between them. She consoled herself with the thought that he must have some doubts, or he wouldn't be so studiously avoiding her. Whatever his reasons, too many days were slipping by with nothing to show for them, and the arrival of his betrothed drew nearer, as did his impending abduction. Although she'd cornered him on two occasions, he'd jumped upon his horse and galloped away, and until her riding improved, it was an effective escape. She felt like a fool, trying to be everywhere, watching for a glimpse of him. She'd picked the lock on his chamber door last night, only to find he'd slipped out the window and scaled the damn castle wall to get away from her. When he'd crashed into the prickly bush, she'd stared with wide eyes, any thoughts of laughing firmly squelched by the sight of him nude. It had been all she could do not to fling herself out the window at him. He was magnificent. Watching him stroll around every day was killing her, especially when he wore a kilt, because she knew from experience that he wore nothing beneath it. The thought of him hung heavy and naked beneath his plaid made her mouth go dry every time she looked at him, probably because all the moisture in her body went somewhere else. Her antics had not gone unnoticed, nor had she missed that several of the maids and guards had taken to loitering about the castle proper, watching with unconcealed amusement. Love hath no pride. Yeah, well, Gwen Cassidy did, and humbling herself wasn't a whole lot of fun. She suspected that by the time she finally wore him down, as stubborn as he was, she was going to be downright pissed off. Didn't he know how dangerous it was to piss off a woman? Chapter 20. Gwen had a plan. Foolproof, so far as she could see. She'd had ample time to reflect upon the errors of her ways, although the list was long and inclusive of virtually everything she'd done since the moment she'd arrived in the 16th century. It was not beyond salvaging. She was still astonished by how thoroughly emotions could cloud one's actions. Never in her life had she done so many stupid things in such rapid succession. But she was under control now, and soon to be in control of him. She was going to tell him her story again, only this time he was going to listen to every single detail of it, from the moment he'd awakened in the cave to the moment she'd lost him, including what he'd eaten, said, worn, what she'd eaten, said, worn, and somewhere in it she was convinced she'd find the catalyst that would make him remember. She'd pondered closed timeline curves for hours last night, along with the thermodynamic, psychological, and cosmological arrows of time. She was convinced the memory was imprinted in his DNA, and despite the arrows indicating one could only remember forward, not backward, she wasn't quite certain she believed that. She was going to give it her best shot to prove the theory wrong. After all, the quantum was rarely predictable. Even Richard Feynman, winner of the Nobel Prize in Physics for his work in quantum electrodynamics, had maintained that nobody really understood quantum theory. Mathematical theory was vastly different than the world implied by such equations. She'd concluded that there had never been two Drustons, merely two fourth-dimensional manifestations of a single set of cells, rather like a solitary beam of light refracted by a prism, where the beam of light was Druston, and the prism was the fourth dimension. Although the single light aimed into the prism would refract in multiple directions, it was still only one source of light. Were that light a person, why wouldn't his cells bear the imprint of his alternate journey? If the memory was there, perhaps remembering would be too confusing, so the mind would seek to resolve those memories
by labeling them dreams, if recalled at all, discarded as nocturnal fancies. Drustin was going to listen to every word if she had to talk herself hoarse. And she knew just how and where he was going to be doing it, she thought smugly, tucking the lance beneath her arm. She might be small, but she was not harmless. Enough shilly-shallying about, feeling wounded and ineffectual. It was time to do battle.
"Get in there and try it,"
Gwyn told the guard. He cast her a dubious glance.
"Go on, just try it," she said peevishly. "I'm not going to hurt you."
The guard glanced at Sylvan, who was leaning against the wall, arms folded, smiling. At his nod, the guard sighed and did as he was told.
"Can you get out?"
Gwyn asked a few moments later. There was the sound of muffled thuds, kicks, and punches. Then,
"Nay, m'lady, I canna."
"Try harder,"
Gwyn encouraged. More thuds, soft cursing. "Good," she mused. "Perfect." She and Sylvan exchanged smug grins. Drustin crept down the stairs, his bare feet silent on the stones. It was 4 in the morning, and although she was asleep, stealth was ever wise with her in residence. He'd heard her enter her chamber last eve, try the connecting door, then sigh and lean against it when she found it still barricaded. The bed ropes had squeaked for a time as she'd tossed, but finally all had grown quiet. He'd stretched out on his back in his bed, hands folded behind his head, refusing to think about her sleeping nude on the other side of the wall. But the tricky part about refusing to think about something was that you had to think about it in order to remind yourself what not to think about. And he knew she would. Sleep with nothing on, that is. She was a sensual wee lass who would enjoy the silky slide of velvet coverlets against her fine, smooth, creamy skin. Slipping with tender, velvety abrasion over her puckered nipples, twining about her hips, probably twisting and turning to enjoy. Exasperated, Drustin gave a vicious shake of his head. Christ, he was going mad, that was all there was to it. Probably from being spied on all the time. She thought he didn't know she lurked about watching him all the time, but he knew. She was a living heat, strolling about his castle, all lush curves and temptation. Thus such stealth to do a man's business. He could have gone outside, but it irritated him that he'd even briefly considered it. It was his castle, by Amergen. She was making him positively irrational. As he rounded the corner, he stubbed his toe and cursed in 5 languages. Glancing down, he made a mental note to have the pile of lances moved out to the armory. He couldn't imagine why they were lying beside the staircase in the first place. Shaking his head and muttering beneath his breath, he walked the few paces down the corridor and slipped into the guardrobe.
"Aha!" Gwyn shouted silently. "Finally!"
She dropped down from the stone arch in the corridor. People rarely looked up, and the darkness in the corridor had provided further camouflage. She landed lightly on the balls of her feet, hurried to the hall, and plucked up several steel lances that were piled flush to the wall of the stairs. Creeping silently back to the door of the guardrobe, she braced one end of the steel lance against the stone wall, and then gently, oh so quietly, wedged it into place. She understood bracing and pressure points with the best of them. 2, then 3, then 5, although only 2 had held the helpful brawny guard just fine. Drustin was a large man, and she wasn't taking any chances that he might crash the door down on her head. A small giggle built inside her. Trapping the laird of the castle in his own guardrobe appealed to her sense of humor. Then again, the fact that she'd been going without sleep for the past 3 nights, waiting for him to make a nocturnal journey, probably had a bit to do with it, too. She stepped away from the door and ducked into the great hall, thinking to give him a few minutes of privacy and time to discover he was locked in and get the worst of it out of his system. She soon found out she'd woefully underestimated how bad the worst would be. Drustin raked a hand through his hair and fumbled in the dark for the door. When it didn't budge, a part of him was unsurprised, yet another part of him met the fact with a kind of glad resignation. She wanted battle. Battle she would get. It would be a pleasure to have it out with her, finally. Once he'd ripped the door from the framing, he would exact vengeance upon her wee body with gleeful abandon. No more, honorable, I won't touch you because I'm betrothed.
Nay, he'd touch her, any damn place and any damn way he wanted to, as many times as he wanted to, until she begged and whimpered beneath him. She'd been trying to drive him mad? Well, he was giving in to it. He would act like the animal she made him feel like being. The hell with Anya, the hell with duty and honor, the hell with discipline. He needed to tup. Her. Now. He slammed his body against the door. It scarce shuddered. Howling, he flung himself at it again. And again. And again. It didn't give a hairbreadth. Furious, he slammed his fists on the door above his head. Another shudder, but nothing significant. He stepped back, eyeing it warily, telling himself he did not feel a bud of respect blossoming. Might the canny winch have wedged braces between the wall and the door all the way up? Christ, he'd never get out. He knew how sturdy the door was. It had been hewn extra thick for privacy.
Open up!
He roared, pounding it with his fist. Nothing.
Lass, if you open up now, I'll leave you in one piece. But I swear to you, if you keep me in here one more moment, I will tear you limb from wee limb!
He threatened. Silence.
Lass! Winch! Gwendolyn!
Outside the door, Gwen eyed the five lances lodged at varying angles between the door and the stone wall. Nope. No way. He was never getting out of there. Not until she was good and ready. But it was pretty darned impressive how much the door shuddered each time his body hit it.
You might have to let him yell himself hoarse, my dear,
Sylvan said, leaning over the balustrade. Gwen tipped her head back.
I'm sorry, Sylvan, I didn't mean to wake you.
He grinned, and Gwen realized where Drustin had gotten his mischievous grin.
I wouldn't have missed seeing my son getting barricaded in the privy by a wee lass for anything. Bonny fortune with your plan, my dear,
he said with a smile, then ambled off. Gwen eyed the shuddering door, then clamped her hands over her ears and sat down to wait him out.
I brought you coffee, lass,
Nell shouted.
Thanks, Nell,
Gwen shouted back. They both jumped at the next enraged roar from behind the guardrobe door.
Is that you, Nell?
Drustin thundered. Nell shrugged.
Aye, 'tis me, bringing coffee to the lass.
You're dismissed. Fired. The end! Hie you from my castle! Be gone!
Nell rolled her eyes and smiled at Gwen.
Be you wanting breakfast, lass?
She said sweetly, loud enough that Drustin could hear it. Another roar. By 10 o'clock, she thought he might soon be ready to talk. He'd threatened, blustered, even tried to sweet-talk her. Then the bribery had begun. He'd let her live if she let him out immediately. He'd give her 3 horses, 2 sheep, and a cow. He'd give her a pouch of coin, 3 horses, 2 sheep, and not just a cow, but a milking cow, and set her up anywhere in England if she would just leave his castle and not bother him again for the rest of his life. The only offer slash threat that had perked her momentary interest was when he'd shouted that he was going to toop her till her bonny legs fell off. She should be so lucky. But he'd been silent for 15 minutes now. Gwen eyed the door, knowing that she shouldn't instigate their little discussion. It would undermine her position as the one in control. No, he had to address her in a reasonable tone first. And it wasn't long before he said,
"'Tis na very pleasant in here, lass."
He sounded pouty. She smothered a laugh.
"'Tis na vera pleasant,"
she imitated his accent.
"'Out here, either. Do you realize I've stayed up for the past 3 nights, waiting for you to go to the bathroom? I was beginning to think you never did."
Growl. She sighed and pressed her hand against the door, as if to soothe him, or be closer to him. This was the closest they'd been in days, with only a door between them.
"'I know it's not very pleasant, but it was the only way I could think of to get you to listen. You escaped your chamber. Where else could I trap you?"
"Let me out, and I'll listen to whatever you wish to say,"
he said quickly, too quickly.
"I'm not falling for that, Drustin,"
she said, lowering herself to the stone floor.
In a pair of someone's outgrown trews, she crossed her legs comfortably and leaned her back against the door. She'd been wearing them nightly, with a flowing linen shirt, as she'd clung to the stone arch above the guardrobe.
"Plenty of cream, as you like it, Gwen,"
Nell said, placing a bowl of porridge, cream, and peaches beside her. A roar from behind the door.
"Are you serving her porridge?"
"'Tis naught of your concern,"
Nell replied calmly.
"I'm sorry, Druston,"
Gwen said soothingly,
"but this is all your fault. If even once you had been willing to sit down and drink some coffee or have breakfast with me and talk, I wouldn't have to be doing this. But time is slipping by, and we really need to get some things cleared up. Nell's leaving now, and it's going to be just you and me."
Silence. Stretching. Taut.
"What do you want from me, lass?"
he finally said wearily.
"What I want is for you to listen. I'm going to tell you everything I can remember about our time together in the future. I've thought about it a lot, and there's got to be something that will make you remember. It's possible that I'm simply missing whatever it is."
She heard a huge sigh from behind the door.
"Fine, lass. Let's hear it all this time."
Druston sat on the floor of the guardrobe, his feet stretched out, arms folded over his chest, his back against the door. He closed his eyes and waited for her to begin. He'd worn himself down, raging. Grudgingly, he admired her persistence and resolve. The fit he'd had would have terrified any lass he'd ever known. While he'd raged and flung himself at the door, he pictured her standing outside it, arms folded beneath her lovely breasts, tapping a foot, waiting patiently for him to quiet. Waiting hours. He felt half a day might have passed. She was formidable. And by Amergen a bit too clever to be completely addled.
"You know she's not addled. Why don't you admit it?"
"Because if she's not addled, she's telling the truth."
"And why does that fash you?"
He had no answer for that. He had no idea why the lass turned him into a babbling idiot.
"I'm 25 years old,
he heard her say through the door.
"That old?"
he mocked.
"My bride is but 5 and 10.
He smiled when she growled.
"That's called statutory rape in my century,"
she said with an edge in her voice. "Statutory," he mused. Yet another unclear phrase.
"That means you can go to prison for it,"
she added. He snorted.
"Why would I care how old you are? Does that have aught to do with your tale?"
"You're getting a long version with a bit of background. Now hush!"
Druston hushed, finding himself curious what she would tell him.
"I took a vacation in Scotland, without knowing it was a senior citizen's bus tour."
In time, Druston relaxed back against the door and listened in silence. He fancied from the sound of her voice that she was seated much the same, back to the door, talking over her shoulder to him. Which meant, in a way, they were touching, spine to spine. The thought was intimate as he sat in the dark, listening to her voice. He liked the sound of her voice, he decided. It was low, melodic, firm, and confident. Why hadn't he ever noticed that before, he wondered. That her voice contained a degree of self-assurance that had to have come from somewhere. Mayhap because whenever she'd spoken to him, he'd been hopelessly distracted by his attraction to her. But now, since he couldn't see her, his other senses were heightened. Aye, she had a fine voice, and he'd like to hear her sing an old ballad, he thought, or mayhap a lullaby to his children. He shook his head and focused on her words, not his idiotic thoughts. Nell silently handed Gwyn yet another mug of coffee and slipped away.
"And we drove up the hill to the stones, but your castle was gone. All that was left was the foundation and a few crumbling walls."
"What date did I send you through the stones?"
"September 21st. You called it Maybon, the autumnal equinox."
Druston sucked in a breath. That wasn't commonly related in the legends, that the stones could be used only on the solstices and equinoxes.
"And how did I use the stones?" he pressed.
You're skipping ahead of me, she complained.
Well, tell me, then go back. How did I use the stones?
Above her, behind the balustrade, Sylvan and Nell sat on the floor, listening. Nell was flushed from her many dashes from Gwyn's side into the kitchen, up the servant stairs, and around to join Sylvan, all quiet as a mouse.
I do not think you should hear,
Sylvan whispered, but cut off abruptly when Nell pressed her mouth to his ear.
If you're thinking I've lived here 12 years and dinna know what you are, old man, you're dafter than Drustan thinks Gwyn is.
Sylvan's eyes widened.
I can read, too, you know,
Nell whispered stiffly. Sylvan's eyes grew enormous.
You can? Shh! We're missing it.
You'd collected paint rocks. You broke them open in the circle and etched formulas and symbols on the inside faces of the 13 stones.
A chill brushed Drustan's spine.
Then you drew 3 more on the slab, and we waited for midnight.
Oh, Christ, Drustan murmured. How could she have knowledge of such things? The legends hinted the stones were used for travel, but no one, save himself, Dagus, and Sylvan, knew the how of it. Except now, Gwyn Cassidy did.
Do you recall the symbols?
He asked roughly. She described several of them to him, and her descriptions, although incomplete, bore enough accuracy to unsettle him deeply. His mind rejecting it, he floundered for something solid to think about, something less disturbing. He grinned, striking upon a fine topic. He had no doubt she'd try to change it quickly.
You claim I took your virginity. When did I make love to you, lass?
He said huskily, turning his mouth toward the door. Gwyn sat on the other side and turned her mouth toward the door. She kissed it, then felt utterly foolish, but from the sound of his voice, it seemed as if he too was sitting with his back to the door. And his voice had sounded closer that time, as if he'd turned his mouth toward hers.
In the stones, right before we went through.
Did I know you were a virgin?
No,
she whispered.
What?
No,
she said more loudly.
You deceived me?
No, I just didn't think it was important enough to mention,
she said defensively.
Bullshit. Sometimes not telling the whole truth is the same thing as lying.
Gwyn winced, not liking having her own words tossed back in her face.
I was afraid you wouldn't make love to me if you knew,
she admitted.
And you were afraid I'd leave you if I knew the truth about you. What a fine pair we were,
she thought.
Why were you still a maiden at 20 and 5?
I just never found the right man.
And what would that right man be for you, Gwyn Cassidy?
I hardly think that has anything to do—
Surely you can find it in your heart to grant me a few boons, seeing where you've kept me trapped for the day.
Oh, all right, she said grudgingly. The right man. Let's see. He'd be smart, yet playful. He'd have a good heart and be faithful.
Faithful is important to you.
Very. I don't share. If he's my man, he's mine only.
She could hear a smile in his voice when he said,
Go on.
Well, he'd like simple things, like good coffee and good food. A family.
You want children?
Dozens, she sighed.
Would you teach them to read and such?
Gwyn drew a deep breath, her eyes misting. Life required a delicate balance. Her own had been painfully unbalanced. She knew exactly what she'd teach her children.
I'd teach them to read, and to dream, and to look at the stars and wonder. I'd teach them the value of imagination. I'd teach them to play every bit as hard as they worked.
She sighed heavily before adding softly,
And I'd teach them that all the brains in the world can't compensate for love.
She heard him draw a harsh breath. He was silent a long time, as if her words had meant much to him.
You truly believe love is the most important thing?
I know it is.
She'd learned all kinds of lessons in Scotland. A career, success, and critical acclaim, none of it amounted to much of anything without love. It was the necessary ingredient that had been missing all her life.
How did I make love to you, Gwendolyn Cassidy?
Gwyn's lips parted on a soft moan. The simple words he just said had sent heat lancing through her body. He was beginning to sound like her, Druston. This intimate talk was melting her. Perhaps it was melting his defenses as well.
How, Gwen? Tell me how I made love to you. Tell me in much detail.
Wetting her lips, she began, her voice lowering intimately. Sylvan grabbed Nell's hand and tugged.
Nay,
she mouthed.
We can't eavesdrop on this, he mouthed back. 'Tis not proper.
Proper be damned, old man, I'm not leaving.
Her lips were pursed, her gaze stubborn. Sylvan gaped, but after a few moments sat back down. And when Gwen spoke, he found himself ceding her a sort of privacy by imagining it was Nell telling him in such detail how he'd made love to her. At first he kept his chin firmly down, eyes averted, but after a time he stole a surreptitious peek at her. Nell did not look away. Brown eyes met blue and held. His heart pounded.
And then you said something to me, there at the end that I'll never forget. You said the sweetest words, and they kind of shivered through me. You said it in that funny voice you have.
What did I say?
Druston moved his hand on his cock. His kilt was tossed to the side, his legs spread, palm around his shaft. He was so aroused that he thought he was going to explode. She'd told him in detail how he'd made love to her, and it had been the most erotic experience of his life. Sitting in the dark, watching the images in his mind's eye, he'd felt as if he'd been reliving it. His mind had filled in details she'd not mentioned, details that may have sprung solely from his imagination, or from some deeply buried memory. He knew not. He cared not. It no longer signified if she was lying or telling the truth. He wanted Gwen Cassidy in a way that defied reason, in a way he refused to further question. He admired her tenacity. He desired her with every fiber of his being. She made him laugh. She made him furious. She stood her ground. She believed him a druid and desired him anyway. By Amergen, he, thrice jilted Druston McKelter, was being pursued by a woman who knew what he was. He could no longer recall why he'd ever resisted her to begin with. He struggled against an intense desire to bring himself to completion, to find release, a release he desperately needed since the moment she'd entered his home. But nay, not in so empty a fashion. He wanted it with her, inside her.
What you said was so romantic,
she said with a little sigh.
Mm-hmm,
he managed. When she spoke again, it took him a few moments to realize what she was saying. And when he did, he leaped to his feet, roaring, but she kept speaking.
If aught must be lost, 'twill be my honor for yours. If one must be forsaken, 'twill be my soul for yours. Should death come anon, 'twill be my life for yours. I am given. That's what you said.
As she finished, Druston doubled over. A spark of heat and light built inside him and spread, enveloping him. He couldn't talk. He could scarce breathe as wave after wave of emotion crashed over him. Gwyn doubled over as a wave of intense emotion crashed over her. She felt funny, really weird, like she just said something irrevocable.
Oh, Christ, Nelly!
Sylvan whispered, stunned both by Gwyn's words and by the realization that he was holding Nell's hand, and she was letting him.
She's just married him!
Married?
Nell's fingers tightened on his.
Aye, the druid vows. I didn't work that spell even when I wed my wife.
Nell's lips parted on a Y, but then they both peeked breathlessly over the balustrade, desperate to hear what would happen next. Chapter 21
Ahem,
Drustin said after a long time.
Do you know, you just married me, lass.
What?
Gwyn shouted.
Would you please let your husband out of the guardrobe?
Gwyn was stunned. She'd married him with those words?
Those were the druid wedding vows you just said to me. A binding spell, and I do not understand how you knew it, but...
God, he still didn't remember. She realized with a sinking sensation, even though she'd told him all of it, down to the minute details.
I knew it, you dolt, because you said it to me. And I didn't know I was marrying you.
Dunna be thinking you'll be getting out of it,
he said testily.
I'm not trying to get out of it.
You're not,
he exclaimed.
You want to be married to me? Without even remembering?
'Tis too late. We are. Nothing can undo it. Best you grow accustomed to it.
He punched the door for emphasis.
What about your betrothed?
He muttered something about his betrothed that warmed her heart.
But that's another thing I do not understand, lass. If what you claimed happened did indeed happen, I do not understand why I wouldn't have woven a spell for you to carry to me. I would have known the possibility existed that I might not make it back. I would surely have given you a memory spell.
Memory spell?
Gwyn sputtered. Could it have been that simple all along? Did she have the key to make him remember, but he'd not told her how to use it? What hadn't she told him so far? She deliberately withheld a few details so she might have something to test him with, should he suddenly claim to have regained total recall. Closing her eyes, she thought hard, sifting through details.
Oh.
Have you a good memory, Gwyn Cassidy?
He'd asked her in the car as they'd approached Bandrocade.
Oh, God, like something that rhymed?
She shrieked.
It may have.
If you'd given me such a spell, would you have told me how to use it?
She said accusingly. There was a long silence. Then he admitted.
Like as not. I wouldn't have told you until the last possible moment.
And if at that last possible moment you melted?
She pressed. There was a harsh intake of air, then an extended silence behind the door, then...
Speak your rhyme, if you have one!
He exclaimed. She turned around and faced the door, then laid her palms and cheek against it. Quietly, but clearly, she spoke. Drustin was facing the door, his palms spread against the cool wood, his cheek pressed to it. He'd whispered the druid wedding vows back the moment she'd said them. There was no way she was getting away from him now. His former betrothal meant naught. He was well and truly wed. Druid binding vows could never be broken. There was no such thing as druid divorce. He braced himself, waiting for her words, hoping and fearing. Her melodic voice carried clearly through the door, and as she spoke, the words shivered through him, mixing past and future with a cosmic mortar and pestle.
Whither thou goest, there goest I. Two flames sparked from but one ember, both forward and backward doth time fly. Whither thou art, remember.
He hit the floor, doubled over, clutching his head.
Oh, Christ,
he thought.
My head will surely split.
It felt as if he were being ripped in two, or had been ripped in two, and some unseen force was trying to crush two parts back together again. It was purest instinct to fight it. Words from a dream place buffeted him.
You don't trust me.
I do trust you, wee lass. I am trusting you far more than you know.
But he wasn't. He was afraid he'd lose her. Then, images, another flash of those blue trues. A naked Gwyn beneath him, above him, a crimson scrap of ribbon in his teeth. The white bridge.
You would fight me to the death!
The counterfeit's lips moved soundlessly.
I see. I see now why only one lives. 'Tis not nature which is innately indifferent, but our own fear that causes us to destroy each other. I beg you, accept me. Let us both be... I will never accept you!
Drustin roared. He'd fought, viciously and victoriously.
Let us both be.
Drustin drew upon his druid will, forcing himself to relax his defenses, forcing himself to submit.
Love her,
the counterfeit whispered.
Och, Gwyn,
Drustin breathed.
Love Gwyn.
Gwyn eyed the door warily. There'd not been a sound from behind it since the moment she'd said the rhyme. Worried, she scratched at the door.
Drustin?
She asked nervously. There was a long silence.
Drustin, are you okay?
Gwyn, lass, open the door this very instant,
he ordered. He sounded winded, out of breath.
You have to answer some questions first,
she hedged, wanting to know exactly who would be stepping out of the guardrobe.
What was the name of the store?
Barrett's,
he said impatiently.
What did you want me to buy you in the store to wear?
I wanted purple trews and a purple shirt, and you gave me a black t-shirt and black trews and hard white shoes. I didn't fit in your blue trews, and you threatened to help me fit with my sword.
His voice deepened smugly.
But I recall your threats ceased once I kissed you thoroughly. You became quite the amenable lass after that.
She blushed, remembering exactly how wantonly she'd responded to his kiss. A tremor of excitement raced through her. He was her Drustin again.
So, what was the saleslady's name in Barrett's? The bitchy, unattractive one?
She added, wrinkling her nose.
Truth be told, I haven't the veriest, lass. I had eyes for only you.
Oh, God, what a great answer.
Open the blethren door!
Tears misted her eyes as she leaped up to hit the top lance and knock it loose. It clattered to the floor, followed by the second one.
And what was I wearing when you made love to me?
She said, kicking the third and fourth out of the way, still unable to believe that she had him back.
When I made love to you?
He purred through the door.
Nothing. But before that you wore tan trews cut off at the thigh, a chemise cut off at the waist, boots named Timberland, socks named Polo Sport, and a red ribbon I...
She yanked the door open.
Removed with your teeth and tongue,
she cried.
Gwendolyn!
He crushed her in his arms and kissed her, a deep soul kiss that seared her all the way down to her toes. When Gwyn wrapped her arms around his neck, he cupped his hands beneath her bottom and lifted her, pulling her legs about his waist. She locked her ankles behind him. He was never getting away from her again.
You want me, lass? Me, knowing all that I am?
He said incredulously.
Always will,
she mumbled against his mouth. He laughed exultantly. Their coming together was not a gentle thing. She tugged at his kilt. He tore at her trews. Clothing flew this way and that, until, gasping for breath between kisses, they both stood naked near the staircase in the great hall. Gwyn glanced up at him, eyes widening, breath coming in short pants, as she belatedly realized where they were. Then her gaze drifted over his incredible body, and she forgot not only where she was, but what century she was in. There was nothing but him. Silvery eyes glittering, he grabbed her hand, tugged her down the corridor into the buttery, slammed the door shut with a kick, and flattened her up against the wall, leaving their clothing strewn about the hall. Gwyn pressed her palms against his muscular chest and sighed with pleasure. She couldn't get enough of touching him. During the time he'd not known her, it had been the worst sort of torture, looking at him every day, unable to caress and kiss him. She had a lot of lost time to make up for, and began by tracing her hands up over his shoulders, down his back, skimming to his muscular hips. His skin was velvet over steel. He smelled of man and spice and every woman's fantasy.
Oh, God, I missed you, lass.
He took her mouth roughly, hands bracketing her face, kissing her so deeply that she couldn't breathe, until he filled her lungs with his own breath.
I missed you too,
she whimpered.
I'm so sorry, Gwyn, he whispered, for not believing you.
Apologize later. Kiss now.
His laughter rolled erotic and rich in the dark buttery,
He pushed her back atop sacks of grain and lowered himself over her, suspending his weight on his forearms. And he kissed her. Slow, intensely intimate kisses, and mad rushes of deep kisses. She drank him in as if he were the air she needed to survive. Melting back against the sacks, she moaned when his muscular thighs slid between her legs. He traced hot, wet kisses down her neck, over her collarbones, across her shoulders. She wrapped her legs around his, rubbing against him wantonly, savoring the slick slide of him. Drustin gazed down at her, marveling. She was so beautiful. Her cheeks flushed, her eyes stormy with passion, her lips half parted on a soft gasp. She was his soulmate, smart, lovely, and tenacious. He would love her to his dying breath, and beyond if such was possible for a druid and his mate. He would show her with his body all the things he felt for her, and mayhap she would murmur those tender words he'd so longed to hear back in the Circle of Stones when she'd given him her virginity. She whimpered when he rasped his unshaven jaw against her nipples. She arched up, hungry for more. He shifted his body so the thick, hot length of him rested between her thighs, moving his hips in slow, even thrusts. Then he pulled back, driving her mad, and proceeded to taste her from head to toe, starting at her toes. Gwyn tossed her head back in ecstasy, long, velvety strokes of his tongue on her calves and ankles. Bending her legs, he traced silky kisses on the backs of her knees, wet, hungry kisses on her thighs, teasing flickers against the sensitive skin where her hip met her leg. Then, deep, warm, wet kisses where she needed him the most. Lapping and nibbling, his hands glided up her body to tease her nipples as he kissed and tasted her until she shuddered against his mouth, arching her hips up for more. Resonance built to an exquisite peak, and she shattered, crying his name. While she was still resonating with tiny tremors, he rolled her over and ran his tongue down her spine to the hollow where her back met her hips, then kissed and tasted and nipped every inch of her bottom, kneading, plumping, caressing dangerously near the hottest part of her, but not quite there. She was going to die if he didn't get inside her, she thought, gritting her teeth. She burned. She ached for want of him. Slipping his hand between her and the sacks, he palmed her woman's mound and pulled her back against him, resting the heavy ridge of his cock in the cleft of her bottom. As he rubbed against her lush softness, he caught her tiny nub with his fingers, flicking lightly back and forth. He savored the tiny cries she made, the soft pants and breathy moans, listened intently to discover just what touch elicited each sound, then played her again and again, bringing her dangerously near the peak. Then denying for the pleasure of hearing her cries grow wilder, of feeling her hips buck back against him, of seeing such evidence of her desire. She knew what he was, and still wanted him with such hunger. It was more than he'd ever dreamed of having. If only she would say the words, those three simple words he longed to hear. Aye, he was a warrior. He was strong and manly. But by Emergen, he wanted those words. He'd passed a lifetime believing a woman might never say them to him.
"Drustin," she cried. "Please."
"I love you," he thought, willing her to hear it, willing her to say it. He traced a finger over her taut nub before slipping it inside her. He closed his eyes and groaned as she clenched around him. When she bucked back against him wildly, the last vestige of his control snapped. He became mindless with need. Wrapping his hands around her waist, he thrust into her in one sleek motion. She sobbed with pleasure, begged him not to stop, then murmured something so raggedly that he nearly missed it. But nay, he would not let such words slip by him. Trembling, he stopped mid-stroke and whispered hoarsely,
"What did you just say?"
"I said, don't stop,"
Gwyn whimpered, pressing back against him.
"Not that. The other thing you just said," he demanded.
Gwyn went still. It had slipped out without conscious thought, an impassioned declaration of her feelings. God, how she loved him. She, Gwyn Cassidy, was utterly and deliriously in love. She spoke quietly, savoring the warmth of her feelings, putting every ounce of her heart and soul into the words.
I love you, Drustin.
Braced on his elbows, Drustin swayed. The words hit him with such impact.
Say it again,
he breathed.
I love you,
she repeated softly. He sucked in a harsh breath and was silent a long while, relishing her words.
Oh, Gwen, my lovely wee Gwen, I thought I might ne'er hear such words.
He lifted her hair away from her face and kissed her temple tenderly.
I love you. I adore you. I will cherish you all the days of my life, he vowed. I knew even back in your century that you were the one for me, the one I'd longed for all my life.
Gwyn closed her eyes, treasuring the moment, hugging his words to her. When he moved again, thrusting into her yielding warmth, she arched back to meet him. Moving his hips, entering her slow and deep, he tipped her face to the side and kissed her with the same tempo, increasing the pace, never breaking the kiss. It was a mating of raw need and mindless melding, as if they could somehow crawl inside each other if they got close enough. He thrust. She screamed. She clenched. He roared. He slid his hands up her body and cupped her breasts, pulling her back against him as he drove inside her. The buttery was filled with sounds of passion, scented with the erotic musk of man and woman and sex. When she peeked again, he exploded, crying her name. He kept her in the buttery nigh as long as she'd kept him in the guardrobe, unable to stop touching her, loving her, unable to believe that it had all worked out, that she'd indeed cared for him in her century, that she'd given him back the binding vows, that even though he'd failed to give her full instructions, she tenaciously persevered, unable to comprehend that Gwyn loved him for exactly what he was, needing to roll it over and over in his mind as if savoring the finest brandy. He made her tell him again and again as he reacquainted himself with every inch of her luscious body. It was full night before he poked a cautious head out, retrieved their clothing, then swept her into his arms and carried her up to his bed, where she would sleep each night, he vowed, till the end of forever.
Chapter 22 Bisetta Alexander sat motionless, one hand clutching her yew sticks, the other her Bible. She grimaced at her